Welcome back. My next guest is the great Luke Jones, always doing great things for Baltimore Positive WNST. Luke, welcome in.
Dennis, it's been a couple weeks. How are you, my friend?
I'm doing well, my friend. Certainly glad to have you back. I saw you there on the Twitter sphere tweeting out your thoughts and whatnot, and I'm certainly glad to have you back.
Absolutely, yeah. I mean, and in all honesty, you didn't see too many because when I get away from vacation as I get older, I try to really get away from it. I check in the Orioles score every night, maybe following it a little bit here and there, but other than that, enjoy having my time away. But definitely, as we've talked about over and over, I mean, you and I are so accustomed to just be talking Ravens this time of year. I mean, we're only a couple weeks away from training camp at this point, but you look at what the Orioles did before the All-Star break. They lose 6-7. You know, there were more than a few fans panicking a little bit that, you know, wondering what's going on and is this team starting to fall apart? And boy, they need the All-Star break so badly. And lo and behold, they win 5 in a row. And at the end of, you know, at the end of play, at the end of that Minnesota series, you're kind of saying the opposite. You're wanting
right.
them to keep playing because they're playing so well and swinging the bats so well. So, I mean, what more can you say? You're talking about a team that's 19 games over 500 by winning percentage. It's the best Orioles club at the All-Star break since 1997, which, by the way, is the best Orioles club of the last 40 years. So that's nothing to just brush off. And they're tied with the Tampa Bay Rays in the loss column for first place in the AL East. So, I mean, this season, which let's face it, and I wrote this at BaltimorePositive.com the other day, not everything's gone perfectly when you really think about it. I mean, there have been some disappointing performances and some injuries here and there. But on the flip side, they've had some very surprising performances. Yennier Cano, starting with him, pitching in the All-Star game on Tuesday night. But I think you just look at this team in its totality, going back to that 10-game winning streak they had last year in early July. And since then, they've played like one of the – I think they've been one of the three or four best teams in baseball record-wise since then. So I think you just look at the consistency that they've shown overall. And at this point, look, they'll probably have another stretch that reminds you of where they were just a couple weeks ago when some concern was setting in. You know, that's just the ebb and flow of a baseball season. But they've earned the benefit of the doubt. And there's no reason at this point to doubt this club. And I'll say this much. When you're 54-35 at the All-Star break, I'll also say this. There's no excuse for this team not to be in the postseason at this point. I mean, that's where they're sitting record-wise. And I say that as a compliment to them. Success breeds greater expectations. And that's where this Orioles club is at this point. And boy, it's going to be a fun second half starting, you know, with this weekend series with the Marlins and welcoming in the Dodgers, then going to Tampa and the Phillies. It's not going to get easier. I'll say this much. They do have one of the more challenging schedules. Yeah.
Yeah. The next 20 games will really separate them from the pack or bring them back down. Hopefully they'll do more of the former than the latter, Luke, but the pitching staff still looks to be very much mediocre. The Orioles can certainly hit with the best of them, but that's my biggest concern going forward. How does this pitching staff? I mean, I don't know what they have to do to get better. And if of course you have also Gonzalez coming up, right? Not Gonzalez.
Grayson Rodriguez.
Yeah. I'm sorry, Rodriguez coming up. They'll have to make some room. They have to make some roster moves. They brought up a bunch of young guys. You have Mateo. You have Foster, Hicks, perhaps. So there's still some roster moves to be made. And do you expect them to any movement before the trade deadline?
I mean, I think that's the big question right now. I mean, first and foremost, I mean, to go back to what you said about the pitching, look, is their pitching good enough to get them to the postseason? Absolutely. I don't think there's any doubt about that at this point in time. However, when you get to the postseason, you don't want to just you don't want to just be happy to be there, right? You want to give yourself the best possible chance to advance. And I'm not saying that I necessarily am expecting the Orioles to get to the World Series this October, but if you want to give yourself the best possible chance to advance and play deep in October and see what happens at that point in time, certainly you look at the pitching. I think you do have to credit the starting rotation for its last turn prior to the All-Star break. Mm-hmm. I thought they pitched very, very well their last turn through. But there's certainly questions. I think you have to question certainly Cole Irvin. I think he's going to be the guy that is out of the rotation once Grayson Rodriguez is called up, and that could be within the next few days. I mean, I think at this point, Rodriguez has pitched well at AAA, has cut down on the walks. I think you have to see what it looks like now, because he's just got too much talent. He has too much of a ceiling to not find out about him in the context of this year, not just talking about the big picture. So you have that. The bullpen, I mean, my goodness, all-star game struggles aside, Felix Bautista has been amazing this year. We saw Yennier Cano, who I thought actually in the all-star game, as much as I just downplayed Bautista's struggles, that might have been as good as Cano's looked in a couple weeks. We've seen him have a little more struggle of late, even though he's still mostly gotten the job done.
And in all fairness, I'd rather see Bautista give up a home run in the All-Star game than
no doubt
couple of games. Get out of your system, Felix.
Exactly, and he hadn't pitched in a few days. And my goodness, I mean, one thing we forget about him, because he just from the moment he was in the majors last year, he's just been so dominant. You do remember, he's still young and he doesn't have a whole lot of experience. So for him to be on that stage, I think he was nervous. I think that was evident. But, to go back to your question, as it pertains to the pitching, the trade deadline, I think if you're Mike Elias, you have to be looking for that right opportunity that you kind of balance not wanting to compromise your long-term future, your long-term chances at success, your long-term health of your organization and your farm system, but also recognizing that you've got a great opportunity this year. And we've talked about this a lot, Dennis, with going back to the 2019 Ravens. I can still remember us talking about the aftermath of that loss to the Titans. And, so many people had the sentiment, and it was natural to feel that way because there was so much disappointment, but people were saying, well, the Ravens were ahead of schedule this year. Well, and we've seen how that's played out the last few years. And that's not to say the Ravens won't get to the Super Bowl this year. But the point is, when you're building something, when you have a young core in place, as the Ravens did and still do, and as the Orioles do at this point in time, it's easy to look at these things in terms of it being like some kind of 4 or 5 year plan, but winning's not always linear in that way. So you want to take advantage.
Right.
That's a long way to basically say that I think if the right deal presents itself for Mike Elias, and you're not going to give up Jackson Holliday, for example, you're not going to give up your absolute best prospect. But if the right deal is there to add a top half of the rotation veteran starting pitcher, and really ideally you'd be able to do both of these things, you can add a high impact late inning reliever to kind of go along with Cano to get to Felix Bautista, and you lengthen that bullpen a little bit in that way. Boy, I think it makes things that much more interesting, that much more intriguing, not just for this team to make the playoffs, but to match up better. Because clearly, the back end of the pen is fantastic, but middle relief has been a little bit more of a challenge, as is the case with most teams and even many contenders. Let's be clear about that. It's not as though every team has five Felix Bautistas in their bullpen. So you have that. Certainly you'd love to have, find a starting pitcher out there that you can add that. I think for me, ideally it would be someone that isn't just a rental for the rest of this year, but maybe has contractual control for next year too. And so then you're improving your outlook for 2024 as well. So those are the things you're looking at as it pertains to the trade deadline. And certainly Grayson Rodriguez can factor into that. And he might have more upside than any pitcher you can acquire realistically in a trade still. So I don't want to be dismissive of that, but you'd like to explore that opportunity. I'll even throw John Means could still have a chance to pitch for the Orioles later this season and be a factor for them very late. And maybe he pitches out of the bullpen. Who knows? We'll see where he is physically coming off of last year's Tommy John surgery. But you mentioned the young players. And for me, that's what's still most exciting about this. We've talked so much about Gunnar Henderson, how he struggled earlier in the year, and then he had the fantastic June. He's hitting leadoff for the Orioles at the moment, especially with Mullins having some struggles. But Colton Cowser and Jordan Westberg just arrived in the last 2 weeks, and you're talking about top 100 prospects in all of baseball. In Cowser's case, you're talking about a former top five overall pick. So you have the upside that they bring, And that also creates more competition among the incumbents, which I think is a good thing as well. I mean, so many of these guys that have been accustomed to being in the lineup every day, suddenly you're looking at it a little bit differently now. So it does, you know, creates a little more urgency. It allows Brandon Hyde to rest guys a little more frequently, that you can kind of get a guy off his feet and he's not playing 13 straight days, you know, when you're in one of those stretches where you don't have an off day. So, and really with this young talent, it just makes you, it makes you better. And I'll even throw out Heston Kerstad, another former first round pick who's at AAA Norfolk and has raked since he's gotten there. He could be an option for them late this season. I think the question now is becoming, and this is a good problem to have, how do you create room for everyone? They're already at a point now where, you know, I don't know if Jorge Mateo is going to be on the roster. You know, I don't know if Ramon Urias is going to be on the roster the rest of the year. You know, I don't know if Adam Frazier is going to be on the roster the rest of the year. I don't know if Ryan Mountcastle, you know, there's a possibility he could be optioned to AAA Norfolk. You know, you're going to have to make a move at some point because as the roster stood over the break, 14 position players, 12 pitchers, you're not going to be able to have that roster alignment for too long. You can do that for a few games at a time, but I think you know, we're already going to start to see that roster crunch. And that's where we come back to the trade deadline, where, you know, one of those names that I just mentioned, do you include them in part of a trade package to get a late inning reliever, to get, you know, as part of a package that's also going to have to include a prospect or two to go get a starting pitcher that can really help you. So these are good problems to have. How many times, Dennis, are we talking in late August about the 53-man roster and who's on the bubble and how are the Ravens going to keep this many cornerbacks, or, you know, which offensive linemen are going to, you know, be their game day reserves? And you want to have tough decisions. You know, if you don't have tough decisions, that means you don't have as potent a roster. So the Orioles are at a point now where you're kind of looking at this thing and saying, I don't know. You know, I mean, right now, as they're getting ready to, you know, as we're getting ready to talk about this weekend series, you know, where they're going to play the Marlins, you have Gunnar Henderson, you have Jordan Westberg, you have Ryan O'Hearn, who has hit so well and has become your everyday, for, you know, your regular first baseman against right-handed pitching at the very least, Ramon Urias, Jorge Mateo, Ryan Mountcastle, Adam Frazier. You know, you're not going to see many 26-man rosters have that, you know, seven infielders. So someone's going to have to go in some shape or form, whether it's optioning someone to the minors, whether it's DFAing someone, or I think the ideal move would be using one of those infielders that I mentioned to, you know, include in a trade for something else that you need. So it's going to be fascinating, but I'll say it once again, good problem to have, because it sure beats where they were a couple years ago, where, boy, you just had a few young players that were interesting and then just a whole bunch of placeholders on the roster that had no chance to win on a nightly basis.
No question about it. And of course, I actually watched the baseball draft for the first time in my life. You know, I love the NFL draft, but I did watch the first round and I saw the Orioles select Enrique Bradfield Jr., a very, very fast young man. And I had read prior to the draft that if you're not sure about who to pick, take an infielder or a center fielder. So of course they went with a guy with a lot of speed that had, you know, had more difficulty at the plate last year versus the prior year. But again, another young player with some great physical tools and an upside.
Yeah, absolutely. I mean, really, and we talk about this all the time in football too. You talk about strength up the middle, right? You know, your defensive tackle, off-ball linebacker, safety, you know, on the defensive side of the ball. Although there's debate, certainly, because you talk about edge and corner and all that. But in baseball, the teams who really know what they're doing when it comes to the draft, you will see them draft shortstops, center fielders, catchers, and of course, pitching. And obviously, the Orioles have veered way more on the position player side, and they veered way more on drafting college players. You know, only two high schoolers they ended up drafting, over, you know, what, over the entire, if not the first couple of days. So in the case of Enrique Bradfield Jr., you know, comes from a prestigious program at Vanderbilt. You know, the SEC is second to none when it comes to college baseball, kind of like how we talk about them in football. The speed is really impressive. The defense is very impressive. For what he may lack in power, you see on base ability, he has walked more than he strikes out. And you're right. You know, his 2023 season, not quite as strong as his 2022 season, but I think at 17th overall. And look, I mentioned a few minutes ago talking about how success brings greater expectations. Well, success also brings lesser draft picks, right? You're not picking in second overall or fifth overall anymore. So that's not to say that Mike Elias won't do well, because they have found talented players like Gunnar Henderson, like Jordan Westberg, who were not top five picks, but it does make it more challenging. But I think at 17th, I think the Orioles were pleased that Bradfield was available. And I hesitate to cite this, but other people have mentioned it, so I'll go ahead and do it anyway. If you're looking for a really simple kind of comp, you look him, you watch him play, and some of the highlights, he reminds you a little bit of Kenny Lofton. Now, Kenny Lofton is a guy who, is a fringe, at least talk about him in Hall of Fame terms. He's not a Hall of Famer, but at least probably someone who should have garnered a little more love from the voters in that regard. But if Bradfield can be a fraction of the player Kenny Lofton was, I mean, you're talking about a guy who was a Gold Glove caliber center fielder, a guy who stole, I can't remember what his high was, but a guy that could steal 50, 60 bases for you. And he's going to get on base for you and be a top of the order hitter. So, I've already seen some people ask what that means for Cedric Mullins. It's like, okay, well, let's see Bradfield in the minors for a year or two here before. we don't have to get ahead of ourselves.
We have
there.
Time.
But that's also part of how this works. In the same way that we've talked about it with the Ravens, the draft being the bloodline to their success, you can't re-sign everyone. You can't extend everyone on lucrative contracts. So if Bradfield is the real deal, then we'll have a different conversation about Cedric Mullins or some of their other outfielders. Or it might be that the Orioles need an ace starting pitcher in a couple years as they're on their way to hoping to win a World Series, and Bradfield ends up being the centerpiece that they trade. I mean, that's just how this works. I don't say this to be cold, but the best general managers look at their players as assets. Right. Yeah, there's a human element. Yeah, there's some subjectivity to that you always have to account for, but you're looking at them in terms of assets. And you have assets that are accumulating value, and you have depreciating assets. And when you're talking about guys that are already in the major leagues and guys that are in their late 20s, like Cedric Mullins, you have to at least ask that question: how much longer is he going to be that kind of a player for you? So you draft Enrique Bradfield, you give yourself another option, however it shakes out. So I think you look at that. I thought it was interesting that they took they drafted a college pitcher earlier than they ever had at any point. We've talked a lot about the pitching side, so it will be interesting to see how that plays out in terms of development. So, but I thought for me, the most refreshing part about the draft, Dennis, was one, it was great to hear some of the pundits talk about how far the Orioles have come in terms of their farm system and the talent they have accumulated over the last 4 or 5 years. But I think more than anything, it felt great to me that the draft felt secondary for the Orioles on Sunday. They got a big win in Minnesota. It was their fifth straight victory overall. News had broke earlier in the day that Jackson Holliday and Kobe Mayo were being promoted, and Jackson Holliday's already at Bowie at 19 years old. There's so many great things going. And then it was a case of, oh, they're also going to draft some more players tonight. So whereas the last few years, the draft would be one of the biggest highlights of the entire calendar year for the Orioles, because certainly you weren't, before last year, certainly weren't seeing too much in terms of fun on the field. So that to me was the kind of the coolest thing about this draft, but we'll certainly see how it plays out. And as I said, it does become more challenging for Mike Elias and this scouting department when you're not picking at the beginning of each round, as the Orioles now find themselves, picking 17th this year. And, if things hold up the rest of this season, they'll be picking even later next year.
Oh, as I watched the home run derby at the All-Star game, and how special of a moment it was for Adley Rutschman to have his dad pitch to him and whatnot, it also dawned me how far that Rutschman has come along, right? It's hard to believe this is his second year. And they've got a lot of these guys on the fast track, Holliday, Mayo. The future really is very bright for this ball club.
It really is. And it's so funny because, I mean, Adley Rutschman, it feels like he's been around forever in some ways. And that's what happens when you're the first overall pick. In 2019, he was Mike Elias's first draft pick. And let's call a spade a spade. And I know COVID complicated this a little bit, but Rutschman could have been in the majors late in 2021. You know, that wouldn't have been unreasonable whatsoever. So, but you know, the Orioles were in a place where they weren't going to be in a rush to call up young players because they were terrible. And, you know, you don't want to waste service time. But I thought for me, the coolest thing about Monday night in the Derby, one, it's neat being a kid from the Pacific Northwest. He had a chance to do that in Seattle. So I thought that was cool. But I, for me, and this, and look, he, you know, Luis Robert ended up beating him out in the first round and he was eliminated. But I thought, maybe it still may have been the coolest moment of the night for the Home Run Derby. And, you know, the other guys put on a show, don't get me wrong, but when he gets his bonus time and he just so casually like, oh, I'm going to hit right-handed now. And he just starts hitting bombs from the right side. I mean, it's just like, that's a heck of a flex right there. That's pretty cool.
Now,
so
you tweeted that out and you got a lot of love on that tweet, rightfully so. But yeah, it was a great moment. And it just seemed like, you know, he just had such great chemistry with his dad, particularly from the right side, because his dad was putting the ball right there and he was just knocking it out of the park. And it was just a, like you said, a way cool moment.
It was very cool. And again, you emphasized this. I mean, I talked more about him starting to, you know, swing from the right side, but the fact that he got to have that moment with his dad, I mean, I think for any of us who, you know, especially in baseball, but any sport really, you know, memories in the backyard of whether it was with your father, your mother, you know, your uncle, you know, you had an older cousin, someone, anyone special in your life that taught you the game. And baseball is a little different in that way. And I'll say that. And look, I've never shied away from it. As much as I love football, baseball has always been my first true love as it pertains to sports. And you know, I seeing that, I mean, I couldn't help but think of my own dad throwing me these crazy major league pop-ups in the backyard that felt like they were leaving the atmosphere to, you know, in the eyes of a 7-year-old, you know, and I'm sure I wasn't alone in that. I'm sure lots of people watching were thinking of, you know, their own father, their own mother, or their older brother, or whoever, you know, played baseball with them in the backyard. So, you know, just a cool moment. And I think I'll say this much, you know, Adley Rutschman, you know, he doesn't have a big home run number. I mean, he, of the participants, he had the fewest home runs at the break, which was fine. You know, nothing to be ashamed about there. I mean, he has what, 12 home runs at the All-Star break, which is a perfectly acceptable number, but he put on a nice show. He did better than I thought he would, quite
he
frankly. You know, I thought he'd do okay, but I certainly didn't expect him to be in a position where Luis Robert had to put up a monster number to knock him out in the first round. So it was fun. You know, it's the second time in 3 years. If you recall, Trey Mancini had the chance to be in the Derby a couple years ago, and you know, that story speaks for itself with, you know, him returning from cancer and having that kind of spotlight. So pretty cool for the Orioles specifically to have that kind of a showing 2 times in the last 3 years. And, you know, for me, it was the highlight of All-Star Week as it pertained to the Orioles' presence there. You know, Batista had a rough go of it. It happens. You know, I saw a few people, I even had a couple of people ask me if I was concerned about it. I said, not in the slightest. You know, to your point, better than even a regular season game, let alone talking about the postseason. So, you know, that aside, you know, Austin Hayes got a hit. Yennier Cano pitched well. We talked about Rutschman in the Derby. Rutschman was hitless in his only at bat, but hit a hard line drive to right field that was caught. So, It's a good All-Star week for the Orioles. And now we get back to the business of on the field and this team starting the second half. And, you know, as I wrote at BaltimorePositive.com, easily the most exciting second half they've had in at least 7 years, because I'll remind the 2016 Orioles were in first place at the All-Star break and they did make the playoffs as a wild card. In terms of the anticipation, the excitement, the upside, the thought that the best is yet to come. We're talking 25, 26 years. You know, that 97 team, which that was a different team. That was a very veteran-laden team.
Sure.
You know, there weren't many young players on that team at all. So the idea that the Orioles are in this position at this point with this many young players, more on the way, you know, I still, you know, and Nestor and I talked about this the other day, ownership, there's still questions there as far as you want to be, when the time comes, willing to augment and spend more money on payroll, spend more money to keep some of these young players. So that's still in the back of my mind. And, you know, that not even the back of my mind, that's still on my mind in terms of where this team's going big picture to try to really maximize what they have going right now. But boy, the overall sentiment you heard from the pundits during the All-Star festivities was, it's a good time to be an Orioles fan. And, you know, as far as the play on the field, there's no doubt about it.
Luke, also, I guess at the forefront of our minds has to be the lease situation. John Angelos had said earlier this year that it would have been a nice quote-unquote gift if they could have the lease done by the All-Star game. There seems to be no movement there. And I'm guessing from a business perspective that if you're the Orioles, the longer you hold out, theoretically, the better the terms you're being offered are going to get. But there has to be a point where, you know, the governor of Maryland and whatnot walk away and say, this is our best deal. But it is a little bit concerning to me, especially since baseball is talking about expansion and putting a team in Nashville and other places. I know that Austin, Texas had been mentioned. Someplace in Mexico, perhaps, which would, I think would be fantastic for the sport to have a team in Mexico. But just your thoughts on the lease situation.
Yeah, I mean, I don't have any concern about, you know, the worst case scenario as far as relocation. But in the case of John Angelos, we've already seen him not be forthcoming and honest in the past. So not surprised, you know, to hear, you know, what wasn't a proclamation or a promise, but him allude to the All-Star break as a goal to get the lease. And look, maybe even as you and I are talking, they're getting ready to announce it. You know, I mean, these things can also be done behind closed doors. You do have a new governor in place. You know, so maybe it is a case of we're really trying to not leak information to the media and we're going to announce this. So, but, you know, as Nestor and I have talked about for a number of years now, you know, for me, there are a couple factors at work here. Yes, the lease is an issue until it's not an issue anymore, in the same way that Lamar Jackson's long-term contract was an issue until it's not an issue anymore, despite fans just wanting to say, well, yeah, they'll get it done. And we saw how they did get it done, but boy, it was challenging and it was unsettling for long periods of time with that. So you have that factor, but for me, and I know Nestor's talked so much about this and it pertains to so many other factors downtown and making the city much more of a destination again, and, you know, clearing up and improving perceptions, you know, perceptions that are fair or unfair, quite frankly. But, you know, there's having a lease and there's wanting to make sure this can thrive. The Orioles, the surrounding area, as John Angelos has talked a lot about wanting to build up the surrounding area and you know, kind of emulate things like what Atlanta's done in other areas where, you know, you have shops, you have restaurants, you know, in some places. I mean, I know Cincinnati, for example, between their football stadium and the ballpark, you know, where the Reds play, there's actually even apartments, you know, for young, you know, 20 somethings to overpay and to live close to both right out of college. So, you know, I think you do want to be careful and really think about how to do this right. You know, not just to sign a lease and give the Orioles, you know, all this money, and, you know, they're going to get the money. I mean, the public funding goes towards a stadium everywhere in this country, you know, whether you like that or not. I mean, I'm someone who has been against that, you know, from just a principle standpoint. But I also understand that if you don't do it, someone else will do it somewhere else. And, you know, we're seeing that, you know, kind of sort of play out with the Athletics. And as it appears, they're heading to Las Vegas, although Oakland certainly made efforts to keep them. But, you know, I think you just want to do this right. And you want to get it where you can, you know, that the Orioles can thrive and that the ballpark area can thrive and that the changes that, you know, improvements and renovations and whatever else they might build in that surrounding area, you do it right. You know, you don't want to be hasty in that way. So, yeah, I'd love to hear, you know, news of a 15 or 20 year lease being announced an hour from now, but you do want to make sure you get it right. And certainly, you know, we already know that there's $600 million that are already kind of earmarked for renovations and improvements to the ballpark. You know, that's coming from, you know, the state government, but, you know, you want to make sure you're doing this right. And from that standpoint, if it has to be a case where they have to draw out negotiations a little bit longer, whether they need to do a short term, another year or 6 months or something like that. But to bring it back to, you know, do I think that if they don't have that lease, you know, a long-term lease struck, you know, by the end of the year? Do I think that means the Orioles are leaving? No, I don't think that whatsoever. I just think it's just a case of, you know, John Angelos trying to get more money out of the state of Maryland. And, you know, from that standpoint, people can feel how they want to feel about that. And I know what my thoughts would be about that, you know, considering, you know, the Orioles in a lot of ways haven't necessarily lived up to their end of the bargain over the last 30 years as it pertains to being a destination downtown and, you know, drawing, you know, more people to the ballpark and whatnot. But, you know, these things are, at the end of the day, I'll be the first to say that it's above my pay grade in a lot of ways, but certainly I expect something to get done. You know, something has to get done and let's be clear, you know, even if you're fearing the worst case scenario, considering where the Orioles and where the Angelos family has, where they have been as it pertains to perception with Rob Manfred and Major League Baseball and Bud Selig and the Masson dispute with the Nationals and all of that, I don't think you would ever see a climate in Major League Baseball where they would even, you know, even if Angelos was pondering, you know, that worst case scenario for Baltimore, not so sure his partners would be overly open or cooperative to that, given how much the Orioles have frankly been a pain in their butts over the last, you know, 15 years or so, you know, as it has pertained to Masson and that. So we're talking about it though, because it's an issue and it won't be an issue when they announce a new lease. So until they do that, you know, we'll have to at least acknowledge, you know, that being a factor. And, you know, certainly it's a factor as it pertains to the long-term health of the organization, even here in Baltimore.
All right, Luke, Cincinnati Bengals, Ellie De La Cruz steals second base, third base, then he steals home. This guy is a phenom. A lot of fun to watch, isn't he?
Ellie De La Cruz, I had a chance to watch him for, you know, I was there for the opener of the Red Series a couple weeks ago. I mean, special talent. There's no question about it. And yeah, I think you saw this with the All-Star game. And Nestor and I talked about the All-Star game a good bit. And look, the uniforms are awful. The uniforms are just so awful in so many ways. First of all, they're just terrible in general, especially the National League. That was a terrible look.
Yeah.
I mean, blue with black pants. I mean, just ugh. But that aside, and, you know, I know Nestor and I disagreed. I love hearing players mic'd up during the All-Star game. I would never want to see that during the regular season, but for an exhibition, I think it's really fun. You know, you get to know some of these guys, but, you know, you put all the bells and whistles aside and you look around, you see the rosters, you see the number of players from all over the world, whether we're talking about Otani, so many players from the Caribbean.
Yeah.
I mean, it baseball more and more is truly becoming much more, and has been for a while. I'm not even saying becoming, it is such an international game. And to see that on display, and you know, you mentioned Ellie De La Cruz, Dominican, you know, that's special. And to see the number of young players in the game today, I mean, I know he's a Tampa Bay Ray, but Randy Arozarena, you know, one of my favorite players to watch in baseball, just with the athleticism and the enthusiasm with which he plays. I mean, it's so much fun. And seeing this now with the Orioles, having some of these young players that are, and not that Adley Rutschman's flashy in the same way that you're talking about a De La Cruz or someone like that, but, you know, with Rutschman and Gunnar Henderson and now Colton Cowser, who's got some swagger to him. We've already seen that in his brief time with the Orioles, and Jordan Westberg doing what he's done. I mean, when you have all these guys that are in their early to mid 20s that are starting for you and playing and contributing for you, and are, you know, some of these guys, you know, in the case of Rutschman and Henderson, already among your very best players, that's really exciting. And I think for the game of baseball itself, you know, when you have a De La Cruz, we've talked a lot about Shohei Ohtani. You have these players. It just, I think for baseball specifically, that, let's face it, is its audience is older, although some data here recently is trending for younger, you know, a little bit younger than recent years, which is a great sign for the game. But I think it's also a reflection of just how many talented young players you have in the sport. And, you know, there are things about baseball I'd still like to see them do better, and things that they could change and improve. But as it pertains to the talent on the field, boy, I mean, there are just some really special early 20-somethings out there on the field that are just so impressive, with LA De La Cruz being the latest example of that, certainly.
Well, and the change they made to the game, and I've talked to you about it ad nauseam, the pitch clock, the ghost runner, not being able to shift. I think those things have opened up the game and attracted fans on the fence like myself to watch more games. And I've been to six games this year, and I've got to tell you, I don't think I've been to six games the last decade combined. And I can't tell you the last time I knew every player on the roster for the Orioles. I can't tell you that I knew anything about the AAA player. So I do think this was, at least for me, it's a really good thing with all the changes they've made to the game. And I do think it's perhaps they're turned the corners from losing fans to gaining fans.
Yeah, I think that's fair. And I certainly hear locally with the Orioles, the timing of them becoming relevant and more talented and better on the field.
It helps.
Certainly is. I mean, that's the big factor. If the Orioles were still losing 110 games, I'm guessing maybe you would have gone to one or two,
maybe,
but you probably wouldn't have
opening
gone to
day.
six.
Yeah, maybe opening day.
Yeah,
stop
yeah.
Right
So,
there. Yeah.
And that's reality. At the end of the day, it's a business. It's just like a restaurant, right? If a restaurant's serving lousy food, you're not going to go there. You know. So in that way, that's certainly helped. But yeah, you look at the rules. I don't like the extra inning runner at second base. I get it. I've said for a while
at my
now.
At my age, I like it.
I
I
will
want to
say
see the
this,
game come to an end.
and that's fine. I would say this. I would like to see them modify and do this. Play the 10th inning normally, play the 11th inning normally, then go to that if you play beyond that. But, you know, it's fine. I don't lose sleep over it. Let's be clear about that. So,
well,
but
see, I was losing
with the.
sleep. I can't watch a 17-inning game. I just can't do that.
Well,
I gotta tap out. I'm going to bed.
But even now, because the game has gotten shorter, I can tolerate, you know, you can tolerate a couple extra innings.
That's a good point.
So, but no, the pitch clock, the shift, although I do think it's funny because there were people who thought the shift would impact things more dramatically than they actually have.
Right.
Because the pitching is just, you know, the pitching, especially when you get into these bullpens and you have these guys like Felix Bautista throwing 102 miles per hour and they've got wicked breaking balls. It is just so tough. But I like the eliminating the shift from an aesthetic standpoint. I do have to admit that. And that's speaking as a baseball nerd who loves these teams that were able to figure out an edge by shifting their infielders. So, but, you know, it really comes down to the pitch clock. It's made for a better pace, a better game. And I think it's been a great positive for the game. So having that coupled with the Orioles being much better, you know, you're not alone in your in that sentiment. And even seeing some data that was released earlier this week, and I don't know if it was Major League. I don't think it was Major League Baseball. So if it was more independent, that lends some more credibility to it. But it talked about the median age of ticket buyers, and younger than it's been over the last 4, 5, 6 years. You know, it's trending younger, which is a good sign because, you know, we've talked about how old baseball's audience is overall.
Right.
So great to see that. You know, great to see more young people interested in the game. Still a long way to go in that department and a lot of competition. You know, as I've, especially now as we get into, we're 2 weeks away from training camp opening up, and we're about a month away from the preseason schedule opening up, and we're 2 months away from football starting, you know, the regular season. So NFL still king, not just in Baltimore, but everywhere that has the NFL. But it's certainly exciting to see what the Orioles specifically are doing and the changes that baseball has made overall. I think it's certainly been a positive for the sport.
Yeah, for sure, Luke. And nothing really earth-shattering from the Ravens front. I know they hired a guy from the Big Ten to put in the front office, but this is the time of the year that no news, it's very good news for the team.
Yeah, overall, I agree with that. I mean, about the only thing you're wondering at this point is, okay, you know, is there a Justin Houston signing? Is there a signing to bring in another corner? I mean, I think that's, you know, we've talked about that. We'll continue to talk about that, whether that signing comes now or whether we're into early August. I mean, we've seen the Ravens add players even after training camp started who ended up making a big impact. So, but yeah, it's been very quiet on that front. And to your point, you know, because what you're alluding to is some kind of trouble, right? You know, someone, you know, there's an arrest or there's some kind of suspension, something like that. So in that case, no news is good news. But I think there's certainly still some intrigue as far as what Eric DaCosta can still do to this roster.
Sure.
You know, I think specifically on the defensive side of the ball, whether you're talking about another edge guy like a Justin Houston, whether you're talking about another outside corner, you know, I don't think it's going to be Marcus Peters if they add an outside veteran outside corner. It might just be Kyle Fuller being added to the mix, you know, if he's healthy coming back from the
Right.
ACL, which, you know, he's had. Remember, he injured himself in week one, so he's had
Very
plenty of
early.
time to rehab. So, and I don't know, that's just me speculating. You know, I've kind of been off the, you know, as you know, I've been off the grid the last couple of weeks. So we'll see how that plays out. But yeah, it's been nice because the Orioles have been so good, so relevant, to not have to force the Ravens conversation right now. Like, it's okay that the Ravens have gone away for a few weeks at the moment. You know, they're going to be there in a couple of weeks, and we'll talk about training camp plenty. And I'll give you all my observations, and I'll have my 12 Ravens thoughts at BaltimorePositive.com. But, you know, as I've always said to people, even during these seasons where the baseball season has just been woeful for the Orioles, where people talk about, I can't wait for the season, I can't wait for training camp to start, and I always say, hey, let's not wish our summer away.
Right.
It's been nice from an Orioles context that no one's wishing the summer away, and that, yeah, there's still going to be plenty of excitement for the Ravens. And, you know, once week one kicks off, the NFL's king. We get that. But in the meantime, it's been fun to see how much interest there is surrounding the Orioles, because it is such a young, intriguing, exciting club. And as I wrote at BaltimorePositive.com, the best is yet to come. And that's what's really exciting.
Yeah.
Their competitive window is just opening right now. So, you know, that doesn't mean anything's guaranteed over the next few years, but they have everything going for them right now as it pertains to young players, controllable talent. They should have flexibility. I stress should, because again, where is ownership in this process? Should have flexibility to add payroll, so that, you know, they've continued to draft and develop well. So everything is right there for this team to not just make the playoffs this year, but to make the playoffs in subsequent years, and not just make the playoffs, but have a really good shot to win a World Series at some point here over the next 5-6 years at least.
Hopefully more people will start going to the stadium to support this team in the second half of the season. But back to the Ravens, the only thing people have been asking me about is left guard. And I tell them the same thing I tell them every year. I don't get geeked up about training camp, OTAs, et cetera, when they're running around in shorts. John Harbaugh will put on – he'll make the guys put on the pads, and whether it's John Simpson or Ben Cleveland or Mylisa Amaveo-Laulu, the kid from Oregon – the best guy's going to win the job. So I don't worry about that left guard position, particularly before they put on the pads.
I'll give you a hint, Dennis. Just call him Big Sala.
You know, Big that, Sala,
he
okay.
goes
There
he
you
goes
go.
by
Thank you.
Sala. You know, his first name is Mala Sala.
Mala Sala.
Go
We'll
by
call him
Big
Big Sala,
Sala.
the last four letters of his first name. So I'll call
Yeah,
him Big Sala
exactly.
going forward. But, again, we don't know what Big Sala looks like with pads on at the pro level. So, to me, until he goes up against those – defensive tackles of the Ravens, we won't know until we'll know later on as camp progresses. Yeah, I'm sure that some guys will get more reps with the first team and they'll start separating themselves. So, look, it is what it is, but they have enough at the other four positions. I don't think that left guard's going to be a big deal. Ben Cleveland, in a contract year for him, right? Was he at Georgia when at the same time as Todd Monken? I wonder. I didn't go back to look at that. Probably was.
He was. It's not a contract year for him, though. This is year three for him, but
right.
It's
pivotal
right, year for
year.
him.
Pivotal
Though.
Year. There you go.
Yeah. So, yeah, I mean, I think you're right. I mean, left guard, first of all, it's a left guard competition anyway. You know, it's not the most, it's important, but it's not
very
the most
important.
exciting, intriguing, where, you know, if you're talking about starting, you know, a quarterback battle or a battle for the starting running back job, whatever it is. But yeah, I mean, they haven't put on the pads yet at this point. You know, I think, I'll say this much. The clock's ticking for Ben Cleveland, because it is starting to feel a little Tyree Phillips to me. And, you know, Tyree Phillips last year was entering his third year, and we saw what happened. They tried to trade him at the end of the preseason, and they ended up waiving him then. So I think for Ben Cleveland, the fact that they actually had him playing some other positions, maybe that was a good sign for his roster standing, but did not appear to be a good sign for him to be their starting left guard. But it's spring, it's OTAs, it's mini camp. Maybe they were trying to send him a message, you know, maybe it was as simple as that. So, but we'll see how it plays out, whether it is John Simpson, whether it is Ben Cleveland, whether it is Big Sala, or as I alluded to, talking about the corner and edge rusher situation, their starting left guard may not be on the roster right now. They might get to the second week of August and say, you know what, we're going to swap fourth round picks with And I'll just throw the Tennessee Titans just as an example. I don't even know who their guards are off the top of my head. For a veteran guard who's in the last year of his contract, and we've got a young guy that we'd like to play, we're kind of rebuilding or reloading or whatever you want to call it. Let's move him to Baltimore, and we'll, you swap a fourth round pick for a fifth round pick or something like that, and get it done. And you take on a little bit of salary, and you get a player that improves your floor there. So, we'll see how it plays out. But certainly on the offensive side of the ball, beyond just the overall intrigue as it pertains to Lamar Jackson and Todd Monken's offense and Odell Beckham and Zay Flowers, left guard is that spot that's wide open right now. And we've said it doesn't need to be a superstar there, but I think you just need to have someone that can give you a high floor, someone that you can plug in there and say, you know what? This guy can be the worst out of our five starting offensive linemen, but just so he's not a liability and not giving us problems there, if he can just be fine playing between Ronnie Stanley and Tyler Linderbaum, I think the Ravens offensive line will be more than fine with that kind of scenario. So we'll see how it plays out. It's intriguing to think that Big Saleh was even lining up there during mandatory minicamp, but yeah, let's wait till the pads come on to really see what this competition looks like.
100%. Luke, it's great having you back. Please tell our listeners where they can find you, Baltimore Positive 1570 AM, WNST, your blog, and all the other great things that you do.
Absolutely. I encourage everyone to follow us on Twitter at WNST. You can follow me personally at Baltimore Luke. You can also follow me on Threads, as that's kind of the new social media. I'm trying it out at the very least. I haven't done too
Ne
much with
never
it.
heard of it. Never heard of it, Luke.
That is, I guess that's Mark Zuckerberg's version of
Is
Twitter.
that
I don't
right?
know.
Oh,
Yeah.
no.
I just saw everyone doing it. I thought I'll at least create an account, but we'll see what happens there. But I will be live at the ballpark over the weekend as the Orioles open up the second half against the Miami Marlins. The Dodgers come to town after that. Plenty of excitement from Oriole Park at Camden Yards. Check out my blog at BaltimorePositive.com. The latest on the Orioles, my 12 Orioles thoughts over the All-Star break. My thoughts on the upside of this club coming out of the All-Star break and how they can get even better, which is saying plenty for a team that's 19 games over 500 tied in the loss column for first place with the Tampa Bay Rays. But you can check that out. I'll have plenty on the Ravens as we're a little less than 2 weeks away now from the start of training camp. It'll be here before we know it. So be looking at the roster and some position battles, things of that nature at BaltimorePositive.com. You want to be on the WNST Baltimore Positive Tech Service, sponsored by Coons Ford of Baltimore. Any significant local sports news sent directly to your mobile device, whether it is the Ravens signing a Justin Houston or signing another notable veteran player. If it's the Orioles calling up another prospect, although not sure that there are any that are imminent at this point, maybe Heston Kerstad as we get a little bit closer to August and September. But any significant local sports news sent directly to your mobile device via the WNST Baltimore Positive Tech Service, sponsored by Coons Ford of Baltimore. And of course, anything throughout the week on AM 1570 with Nestor. Any Orioles sound from the ballpark. And of course, as training camp opens up in just a couple weeks, Ravens players and coaches interviews from Owings Mills. Check out all of that at BaltimorePositive.com.
All right, look, I appreciate you, your time, your thoughtfulness, and we'll talk to you in a couple of weeks as I'm going to take a quick break here and get some R&R.
Sounds great, Dennis. Enjoy your trip. Enjoy some rest, well deserved. And
I appreciate
hey,
you.
when we reconvene in a couple of weeks, we'll have some early training camp impressions to share.
You'll have to catch me up on all that.
Sounds good, Dennis.
My friend, stay well. There he goes, Luke Jones here, 1570 AM WNST. We'll take a quick break and come back right after this.